banish thee from Salem forever.
They were right to fear thee. Magic has a way of uniting. Happy 16th birthday, child.
I have a gift for my favorite customers. Legend has it, it's on the 16th birthday that a witch gets her powers.
Lock up your children! Yes, Salem, we're back!
Hello, and welcome to Unloved Sequels, the podcast that brings you a blow-by-blow critique of Hollywood's worst-rated sequels. You know, the ones that some people think should never have been made. We're your hosts. Michael, say hello.
Hello.
And I'm Claire. This episode, we're launching Spooktober with a brand new sequel that we've both been getting very excited about. Michael, we were worried that this movie might not qualify as an unloved sequel, but looking at the reviews so far, I think we're pretty safe covering it. So what's the movie?
Okay, so the witches are back with more songs, with even more girl power. But with a new generation of fans by their side, they seek the ingredients for the ultimate power spell. This week, we are talking about Hocus Pocus 2.
I'm Yay! So excited!
Yay! Okay, so we have no viewing numbers for this just yet. It's because we're recording this the weekend after it got released. So Disney haven't been gracious enough to send those figures out yet. We'll probably get them later.
Did you not tell them that we were scheduled to record this morning?
I know, what a bunch of bastards. So you think that we would...
They what, like they've got other things going on?
Exactly. Oh, rudeness. So we have no viewing numbers, but what I do want to point out is that when the trailer was released about 3 months ago, 43.6 million people viewed it in the first 24 hours. So if that's a hint on what this is going to do, you're looking at kind of the world of movies, and it, because this is so accessible being on Disney Plus for so many people, it's going to have them viewing numbers. I wouldn't be surprised if it's going to be one of the biggest debuts that Disney Plus has ever had.
Yeah,
everybody's talking about it.
Everyone on my Facebook feed has watched it over the weekend. It's all I've seen all weekend. It's people watching this movie.
It's at the time of this recording, the Rotten Tomato scores are sitting at 59% critics, 55% audience. So there's quite a divide there, and it's not going to live up to everybody's expectations.
No, that's true.
But Claire, do you have any behind the scenes stuff for us?
I do. So we talked about returning players and such when we did our little preview chat last week about Hocus Pocus. Yes. So I'm not going to spend a long time going back over who's back and who isn't. Aside from anything else, like if you're a fan of the movies, you know who's back, you know who isn't. Our three main witches are back. We've got Billy Butcherson back. In terms of cast, that's kind of it. Although we do see clips of the original movie. There are some flashback scenes. So we see Emily and Thackeray Binks in flashbacks in this movie. There is a scene where, although the actors that played Max, Allison and Danny are not in this movie, there is a scene where we see those characters in flashback from the perspective of Gilbert, who is the shop owner in the sequel, who is a little boy in his flashback that we go back to seeing basically the final scene of the original movie where the sisters explode at sunrise, but we see it from Gilbert's perspective. So we see other actors taking on the roles of the children in that scene, but the actors themselves are not back. Now, that seems to have been quite a point of discussion all the way through the production process for the movie. And it seems to be something that's coming up in terms of people's feedback on the movie as well. The fact that none of the three child actors from the original movie are back in this movie.
Yeah.
Now, I think the decision was made because there is a sequel book that came out about 5 years ago that has a completely different storyline to Hocus Pocus 2. And it's primarily, it's about Max and Allison's teenage daughter, Poppy, I think is her name.
Yes,
in the
that's
book.
Correct. Yeah.
I haven't read the book. Michael has, so he will chip in if there's anything that needs adding in. But yeah, it's centered around they're now adults. Max and Allison have got married and had a kid, and the central young character in the book is their daughter. That story has not been used in the movie for various reasons. I don't know what all of those reasons were, but I think the impression I get is that the production were very keen to make this a new movie rather than redoing the old movie. And I think it would have been very difficult for them to have used the original characters in a movie that wasn't about the original characters.
Yeah. While we're on the subject of the book, I think people have got to take into consideration, because I've seen the book pop up a couple of times in conversations this weekend as well myself. You've got to realize this book was written before Disney Plus existed. There was not even a discussion of them making a movie about this. They were never going to make a Hocus Pocus 2 sequel to go in the movie theater. The first film was critically and financially a massive flop for Disney. It's only become a cult classic over the last 30 years, and it being constantly rerun on Halloween. They were never going to invest money into this. It was supposed to be about quick viewing figures for them. So when Disney Plus existed, they were talking about, you know, pushing a sequel for them because it could have a lower budget. It was easily accessible to the public. It didn't rely on massive rollouts and massive promotion. Also, the subjects in this book would have been really difficult to focus in today's world. So in the book focuses on the witches possessing other people's bodies and bringing up loads of other witches from hell. Now, I know...
It's pretty dark for a kid's movie. Dark.
And today, like, you think about... We've talked about this on this podcast quite a lot, how different kids' films are today that we grew up with. If Disney did go down that route of the original movie and tried to make a direct sequel, do you think parents would accept now the darker themes on a PG-13 movie available? That, can you imagine the complaints of them showing hanging in a modern day movie that the kids would want to watch? It's all over social media. Possession, promoting bullying like the first one does. And how many times they were mention the word virgin in the original movie?
Oh, don't start me off on that rant again.
Well, that's the whole thing.
I like the way they handled that issue in this movie, by the way.
Yeah, but you get what I mean. Is they would be, if they did go down this book route, it would be a lot of parents wouldn't show it to their kids. The kids just see the picture and then they want to press it. And yes, there is restrictions that people can have on their Disney Plus box and stuff, but this is a PG movie.
Yeah.
You know, parents just go, oh, it's Hocus Pocus.
Yeah, but those restrictions on Disney Plus, this movie would still come up. I have restrictions on for my kids based on their ages. And this movie, I haven't checked on their profiles, but I would imagine this movie will still come up, certainly on my son's profile, because he's got, I think I've said, like 8+, because he's about to turn 8.
Well, in America, this is a PG-13. Well, I mean, the UK, it would just be a PG. So it would come up because it's just parental guidance. And a lot of parents would just push play. And if they went down the routes of hanging, talking about Ouija boards they do in the book, talking about possessing other people's bodies, I don't think parents today would accept that. Kids' entertainment is much more streamlined than it was back when we were younger. You know, it's very much more light and fluffy, and they have more content they can pick from.
Well, yeah, I mean, like you say, we've talked about this before. When we were kids, we just watched what was on because there wasn't a choice. Mm-hmm. And so there was only a limited amount of content being produced with children specifically in mind. Yeah. It was family movies rather than children's movies. Whereas now there is a lot of content being produced for children because they've got those options available to them, because we've all got the streaming services, and because, you know, parents have other things they can be doing. So they don't mind if the kids watch what they want to watch while the parents are getting on with other things. They might be doing the housework, or they might be doing their own work or reading a book, or, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
people do different things. It's people don't just sit as a single unit, because there's more than one TV in a house now as well a lot of the time.
Yeah,
you know, when we were kids, there was a TV. So if you were watching TV, you were watching whoever was deemed to be the most grown-up person in the room at the time wanted to watch. And if that was your mum or dad, it had to be something that they would enjoy. Whereas now, if my kids want to watch some nonsense on Netflix, I can go in a different room and watch something different, or listen to the radio, or read a book, or, you know.
On your phone, it doesn't really, you know, kids are far more subjected, have so much more social media now as well. I just don't think people quite grasp that this movie is designed for children.
Yeah.
All these 30 to 40-year-old people going, it's not the sequel I wanted. It's not for you. It's for you to sit and watch with your kids. It's a kids movie. It's a Disney kids movie. And this one is designed for a new generation of kids to grow up with. Not for it you is. To go, oh, it's not what I wanted. Where's Allison and Max? And, you know, where's their story?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know.
So on that, so Anne Fletcher, the director, did a chat with Entertainment Weekly earlier this year, actually. She was talking to them about the movie and the subject of the original cast came up. And I'm just going to read from the article here just for a couple of paragraphs. Ooh. Sequel director Anne Fletcher tells Entertainment Weekly that they tried to weave the teens back into the story, but that, quote, it was difficult, end quote, even in a cameo capacity, which she feels might have been a distraction from the new movie's plot. We wanted to weave in all of the people that the fans loved. And when you sat back with all the ingredients and story, you're like, how do we make this work? Fletcher explains. It was very difficult to try and have them be part of it because we did talk about it painstakingly. You're trying to stay on track with story, even if they came in as a cameo. People would say, they could be in the background. And I'm like, really? You're going to put the leads of the first movie in the background and be satisfied? You're not going to be satisfied. True. You're going to be angry.
Yes, you will be. But we talked about when we were watching this together, we did like a group watch. 4 o'clock Eastern time, a.m. I got up early and watched it with Claire. It was 9 a.m.
Dropped the kids at school, came home, cup of coffee, and I was watching a kids movie without my kids.
Holding my eyeballs open with matchstick. And we sat and watched it. And when we came in with it, we thought, oh, why didn't they just use like a picture of them in the background and talk about that and having...
Yeah, for me, they could have used Dan, like Danny could have been the mayor's wife. But again, maybe it would have been a distraction. Maybe then we'd have been looking for a connection that didn't need to be there.
I think the problem is we thought of them, but if they actually did that, that would have been, we would have been like, what are they doing? Why are they wasting it? Why? Why?
Yeah. Why is she in the movie?
Yeah, we would have been pissed off.
And
they did
that.
And
you know what? I didn't miss them.
No, I didn't.
I know. I said all the way along, I would love Thora Birch to be back in it, and I would have loved them to have found a way of her being in it.
Yeah.
And she was in talks at one point to be in it. She couldn't be because she was working on Wednesday, which ironically she then ended up leaving production of.
Why
did she leave Wednesday?
Yeah, why did she leave?
So the official line, I haven't done a deep dive on this because it's so far removed from what we're actually talking about, but I did do a quick check because I'm nosy. The official line at the time was that she left production due to a personal matter and it was a family illness or something. But then later it came out that actually there was some creative issues as well between her and the production. So she left the production. But she had been in the role that Christina Ricci is going to be playing. So
More like Christina Ricci came available and they're like, let's just pick
or
on her.
Or suddenly they're like,
quits.
Yeah, let's ditch. I don't know. We can't possibly say that's what happened if anyone from anyone's legal department is listening to this.
Yeah.
But yeah, point is, Thora Birch was in talks to have a role in this, probably a smallish role in Hocus Pocus 2, but couldn't because of scheduling issues. So we ended up with none of those three. But they are talked about a lot. They are far from forgotten.
Oh yeah, no.
Movie.
They're in the background. They're just a part of the old storyline. Like
yes. Well, the whole point of this movie is it's how the legend of the Sanderson sisters has carried through Salem over the last 30 years, and then how much of that legend turns out to have been true.
Reverend Amer Tush, played by Tony Howe. He's wonderful in this. He's so good.
Isn't he?
He's like the two sides of the same coin. And it just shows you the old times and the modern day times with kind of like leadership for a town. And kind of like, you know, I loved him in this. I thought I really enjoyed him.
And I think he captured the two characters really well. And actually he made them different enough that I kind of spent a lot of the movie second guessing whether it was him in both roles or not. While we're on the subject of Reverend Trask, shall we talk about that little prologue intro scene with the young Sanderson sisters?
They were fantastic.
They were fantastic. Oh my goodness.
Especially the young Winifred, played by Taylor Henderson. She is a powerhouse.
Yeah.
She is like method. I was like blown away by her. And if they're going to do a spin-off from this, and they really, you know, like if they want to advance the franchise, what I want to see is instead of focusing, and I have a feeling they're probably going to go down the new coven route instead of with Hannah Waddingham's character.
Mm-hmm.
What I would prefer them to do is make a spin-off of the Pilgrims and the days.
You want to see the Sanderson series.
I want to see them three girls.
Yeah.
With kind of like them building their house in the woods. And
well, because this is the thing. We've got, you know, we get a really nice enough of their backstory to see how they got from where they were at the beginning, which is just three girls who are just looking out for each other. They're orphan sisters. But yes, there is a whole lot of storyline between what we see in this movie, which is them getting book from Mother Witch, who is amazing. I love Hannah Waddingham so much.
So
very underused in this movie.
That's the one thing. Yeah, 100%. That's one of the main things I have an issue with this film is that I really wanted her to come back at the end and have a face off with Winifred for doing the spell. Like she did.
Yeah, I'm kind of torn on it because I think in terms of the narrative, I don't think that character was missing. But in terms of her performance, I would love to see more.
I just wanted more of her. Yeah. I just wanted more.
So I think whatever comes next, I'm hoping there is going to be some sort of spin-off from this movie, probably in the form of a TV series rather than a third movie, perhaps. But whichever direction they go, whether they go with the young Sanderson sisters or whether they go with the new coven, I hope we're going to see some Hannah Waddingham in that if it happens, because she is fantastic. Yes. She was brilliant in the role. And I think she's got a lot more to offer.
So cab.
Yeah, it was a really good opening. But you're right, there is definitely scope for them to explore the journey from receiving book from Hannah Waddingham through to the point of them being hanged as witches at the beginning of the first movie. There's a lot that happens there, and that might be quite interesting to explore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, of course, we are in the present day. So we're then 30 years, give or take, 29 years, I suppose, since the events of the first movie. And it's the Sanderson sisters have become legendary, absolutely legendary in Salem. I don't really know how, because what happened in the first movie from Salem's point of view was awful. So how we've got to the point of them idolizing the Sanderson sisters.
Well, look at modern day society, Claire. We idolize serial killers now. There's documentaries.
Yeah.
Like, look at Netflix. Everybody's talking about at the moment the Dharma TV series with the guy from American Horror Story.
Okay, fair enough.
And what I really love the fact that the movie lent into how much of a pop culture these bad villains have come. We love a Disney villain.
Yeah.
The Sanderson sisters have become Disney villains.
Oh, for sure.
You know, like, if you think of The Little Mermaid, ask people if they like Ariel or Ursula. People are going to say Ursula.
Of course.
You know, people say, like, who they like, Aladdin or Jafar. People are going to say Jafar. People like the villain more than they like the
absolutely. Well, because they're usually better characters. They're more rounded characters.
Yeah, and they get to be evil and camp it up. And, you know, they just, it really leads into what they want to do.
All right, so on that, let's talk about the Sanderson sisters in this movie. They're back!
Oh my god, that trio. They are, the trio is back and I am obsessed.
No, really?
Like, let me just break it down. Okay, I'm going to talk about each of the Sanderson sisters. So I'm going to go backwards. So you got Mary, played by Kathy Najimy.
Yep.
She's great in this. I felt like she was the weaker one out of the three this time around. Well, I always felt like in the original trio, it was always Bette Midler, Kathy Najimy, then Sarah Jessica Parker.
Yeah.
I felt like there was a shift in balance within this movie. And I felt like Kathy Najimy, probably because she's not as famous or outworking as much as the other two.
Yeah, maybe.
I felt like she had not really kind of like developed her character more than it was. I suppose in a way, not being kind of like talking about people's physique, but her losing that weight and kind of like being healthy towards herself and losing that whole larger jolly kind of like, I'm going to eat you up as like a fat person.
Yes, she's lost that kind of Hansel and Gretelness that she had in the first
exactly
movie.
And also she changed the side of the mouth where her little lip was, because in the first one it was on one side and in this one it was on the other, and she talked about in interviews how she couldn't do it on the other side.
She just can't do it on that side anymore.
No, and so there's a scene in the beginning of this film where she gets slapped and it moves from one side to the other to move the slap across. I don't think that a lot of people picked up on that joke. Sarah Jessica Parker is even better in this
she
one.
She is a queen in this movie.
She is fantastic. I think she's given a lot more to do. And I feel like she's, I think in the first one where she was doing Sex and the City, but she wasn't the big household name she is now.
Mm.
And I feel like her to be next to Catherine Jimmy, who at the time was really big due to Sister Act movies. Yeah. And also being next to Bette Midler, I think she felt like she wasn't as big a star to be in their presence, and she felt a bit more timid. In this, she holds her own.
Yeah.
She is fantastic. So there was I read an interview with her during the production of this, and she said she was finishing up filming And Just Like That, what's the sequel to Sex and the City TV series. And she hadn't even really read the script to Hocus Pocus 2. And she couldn't have Sarah and Carrie in her head at the same time because they're both polar opposites.
Yeah, I can see that. That would be confusing.
And it's, oh my gosh, she's so glorious in this movie.
She is.
I just love her. She just like, her comedy timing is just fantastic. I really, really enjoy this movie.
Her working in a pairing with Bette Midler is much better.
They were bouncing off of each other so much.
Which might be why Kathina Jimmy feels a little bit more to the side, because she wasn't as in that dynamic a lot of the time. Now, this is not to say that we didn't like Kathina Jimmy. Well, speaking for myself anyway, that I didn't like Kathina Jimmy.
Yeah, no, I enjoyed her in it.
She was very good. But I think you're right. In terms of progression of the characters, you see Winifred is much more rounded than she was in the original movie. Sarah is much more rounded than she was in the original movie. Mary hasn't had quite the same amount of development as a character, I think.
Yeah. But let's just stop and think about how glorious, glorious Bette Midler is in this part. She was there.
You can
every
see how much fun. And I wonder if that might have been part of the thing with how long it's taken to get this movie into reality, because as you were saying, Disney Plus has only existed for the last few years, so the option to put it straight onto streaming hasn't been there until recently. But also until about 2 or 3 years ago, the three main cast were not interested in doing a sequel.
No.
And I think we've now got
the other two have always been like oh, do we need to do this? Bette Midler's always been like, I want to do this, because she had a way of a time playing Winifred in the first one.
This is the thing. I think we reached a stage where they were all at the point where they could afford, artistically or financially, I don't know, to do a movie just for the fun of it.
Yeah.
Because I think they always wanted to do the movie if it was, you know, because they clearly all three had a lot of fun making it. Yeah. But as you say, there is risk involved in taking on a sequel to a movie that did not do well the first time around.
And let's face it, these three girls aren't cheap. They're not cheap. They're not going to take a small paycheck. So for Disney to do it, it needs to be quick, accessible, and cause clickbait. And this is it's baited, you're baited, you're clicking on it.
You're
going to watch the movie. If this was in the movie theater, I don't know how well it would have performed, you know, especially word of mouth. I think it would have had a really strong opening weekend. And with all these Rotten Tomato scores, a lot of people would have gone, oh, I'll just wait for it to come to streaming, or I'd wait for it to come on DVD
or
Blu-ray. I think it would have been a financial disappointment for Disney to have, like, make all those reels, send them out to different movie theatres and stuff. I think the fact that it's on streaming is financially viable for Disney to make films like this, sequels.
And it's enough of a pull. To get people, you know, we know that Disney likes every now and then to chuck a big movie straight onto Disney Plus to try and attract people, particularly at this time of year, because then you get people signed up, they do their free month or whatever, and then, oh, it's nearly Christmas, and then we want to watch all the Christmas movies and the kids are off school, and so let's keep Disney Plus to get through the school holidays.
But going back to Bette Midler, she embodies this character. There is spoilers in this conversation, guys. But when the other sisters disappear and she took it and the book leaves her, like, I mean, I
genuinely
was like,
cried.
Method. I was just like, why am I emotional about this woman?
Genuinely cried. I've watched the movie twice because I'm not quite as insane as you. But I watched it with you first thing when it was released, and then I watched it last night with my husband. I didn't get fully teary last night watching it, but even though I knew what was coming, I still got a little bit emotional watching it last night, because I think that's the thing that that I really like about this movie from the first mm-hmm. one is that you see the connection between the three. The relationships become so much deeper. The first movie was very much the Winifred Sanderson show, and they were her backup. Yes. Mm-hmm. And in this movie, you see that the other two sisters are a bit bolder this time round. They're not, yeah. I mean, you know, they still get treated like crap by her. But yeah. we see at the beginning the tightness of their bond, the whole situation, the whole reason they end up being witches in the first place is because Winifred does not want to be separated from her sisters. She won't accept being driven out of yeah. town on her own and her sisters being left to be adopted by someone else. That's the catalyst for their entire storyline.
Well, this whole film is based on sisterhood.
Absolutely.
The new coven sorting out their problems.
Absolutely.
The love that the biological sisters have for each other as well. It's a woman, and with a female writer and a female director, we're talking girl power. This film Absolutely. Is a focus on
we
girl
see
power.
At the very beginning, Mother Witch talks about how a witch is nothing without her coven, which raises yeah. questions about what happened to her coven. Did they get caught in the witch hunts, or did she use the same spell and lose her coven yeah. that way? By the end of the movie, we think, you know, at the beginning I thought, because she says, oh, it's, you know, it's a tough time to be a witch. And so I was thinking the witch hunts must have caught them. But actually by the end, yeah. when you see what happens when Winifred casts the spell, you think, actually, is that what happened to Mother Witch? And then you see the relationship between the three sisters, the three biological sisters, like you say, and then also the three girls, the three young girls, and their mm-hmm. relationship, which is tricky because teenage girls are awful. I say that yes. as a former teenage girl. It's very difficult to navigate relationships as a teenager, and navigating the friendship relationships is almost harder. I'm talking from my own experience. It can be as hard, if not harder, to manage those relationships between your girlfriends and yourself as any romantic yeah. relationships. And they did that old little switcheroo thing like they did with Frozen, that when they talk about sacrificing your love in the Magicus Maximus spell at the end, and she says, I sacrificed my love. And when you first hear her say that, you think, oh, she's talking about Billy because his head is right there. And then you yeah. realise that's not what she's sacrificing. And as we know by this stage, yeah. another spoiler alert, her relationship with Billy wasn't all that anyway. She goes on about the fact that he was her lover. But they were never in a long-term relationship. He never loved her. I think she probably loved him in as much as she could.
No, he just kissed her.
But I'm not sure that he ever loved her.
I know. Do you know what? I don't think she loved him either. I really do think that. The fact of yeah. she had no problem with Billy until Billy
possessiveness to, rather than it actually being a love thing.
Sarah,
yeah,
and then she didn't like the fact that he chose her over Sarah.
Yes, and she is very preoccupied yeah. with being.
She likes to be in control of the two other sisters,
the important one, the pretty one. She you know, because she's yep. so self-obsessed. I suppose the yep. idea of her sister being chosen over her, particularly her in inverted commas idiot yep. sister. However beautiful.
But Bette Midler, going back to Bette Midler in this movie, not only is she glorious in the part. I'm just going to throw this out there. I think we should have a massive campaign. For people who like this movie or not, you can't deny Bette Midler is a powerhouse in here. I really do think we should do a massive push to at least get her nominated for a Golden Globe for this. Now, I was like, would they nominate her for a Golden Globe? But I was looking at Golden Globe nominations. Glenn Close got nominated for 101 Dalmatians.
Mm-hmm.
Melissa McCarthy got nominated for Spy. Sandra Bullock wow. got nominated for The Proposal.
Okay.
You know, Meryl Streep got nominated for Death Becomes Her. If these things are possible, why can't Bette Midler be nominated for Winifred? Now, like, she's fantastic in this movie. She needs recognition. I think that we should all have a massive online campaign to push for her just to at least be nominated, so people are aware that she's made this iconic character. Like, she's like iconic alongside Freddy and Jason and all those other Halloween horror characters. Winifred's up there highly in the eyes of Disney.
Yeah.
And I just think that she should really be pushed forward to it. The other thing that you and me discussed in the previous episode is when we discussed about whether the jokes would still work, like the road joke and stuff.
Yes.
And as we and Claire watched this together, it did work.
I think they got away with it. So my big concern for this movie was, how are they going to straddle that line between the old movie and moving things forward? Because they're not trying, they're actively not looking to rehash the old movie. But you have to reference it. And I think they put enough nods all the way through. And actually, if you pay close attention, there are so many, but a lot of them are very, very subtle ones. And then you get the ones like, you're talking about the door to Walgreens, aren't you?
The door and the home Alexa device.
Oh, and the Alexa thing, yes.
Because you said to me, how are they going to redo these jokes? Like the road joke, it doesn't work anymore. I think the world's moved on more in 30 years.
More than I realised in 30 years. Yeah.
We're just old.
Yeah.
The other thing they I was worried about in this film is when they introduced the Roombas instead of the Hoover.
Yes.
And I was like, this is going to age. But I'm glad that joke paid off in the end. I kept going, why do they keep going back to these bloody Roombas?
Yeah.
They really did pay off in the end. I thought they were quite... They were a massive set trick. They were a massive part of the storyline.
Yeah. Yeah, you thought it was just going to be a little throwaway thing because, like, in the first movie, they had the broom and the mop and the Hoover. So in this movie, they've got a broom and a Swiffer and the Roombas. And you think it's just a little nod to that. But then those Roombas... And I loved the little bubbles that came out of the Swiffer as well when they were flying. That tickled me quite a lot. But then the Roombas end up being plot critical. Who knew?
Yeah. Doug Jones was giving a lot more to do in this as Billy.
Yes. He was fantastic.
He was so good. Because obviously that actor has got famous with Shape of Water and other movies that and the Pan's Labyrinth. So he's become an iconic character for playing those kind of roles. And they gave him a lot more to do. If they do another sequel to this, I don't think we'll see Billy again.
For Billy's sake, I'd like that to be the end of his story. Because he's got his piece. There was a little thing I saw an article today about did it create a plot hole the way that his story tied up? So I just want to quickly address that in case anyone's a bit like, well, how come? Because the issue, the question raised in the article was when the Sanderson sisters were killed, in inverted commas, at the end of the first movie, a lot of their magic was undone. For example, the enchantment of Thackeray Binks. He was released from that curse and he was no longer stuck being this immortal cat and he was able to pass on and be at peace. And then we see much the same thing happens at the end of this movie and people have been saying, well, why didn't that happen to Billy at the end of the first movie? Because he was cursed by her and why wouldn't he get released when she died at the end of the first movie? The reason being, of course, that... In this movie, we see his story arc. He didn't really have much of a story arc in the first movie. He was more of a device than a character in his own right. Mm. Whereas in this, you know, we see the story of him wanting to get it out there that he and Winifred were not lovers, that they were not in a relationship. This whole legend has been built up around the fact that he and Winifred were lovers. And by the end of the movie, that information is out there and Gilbert promises that he's going to tell Billy's story truthfully, which is then what allows Billy to be at peace. It's the last thing that's said to Billy before he disappears is that, you know, Gilbert says he's going to tell his story. And so that is the thing that allows him to be released and to be at rest now, because he's tied up all his loose ends from Earth in much the same way as Binks had in Saving Danny in the first movie, had tied up his loose ends and kind of felt at peace about his turmoil from not having been able to save Emily. So that kind of clears up any... Because there were a few things that I was like, okay, well, how does that sit with the events from the first movie? I was a bit confused about where the sisters suddenly got powers from halfway through casting their final spell at the end. And I was like, did they have them all along and they just never tried to use them, or did the starting the spell, even though they hadn't finished it, give them the power? Or that didn't, I mean, you've seen the movie more times than me. Maybe there's an explanation that I have missed.
Winifred does say when they're kind of like doing the whole, what I like to call the Empire from Star Wars finger zapping thing at the new coven. They said, I felt like their powers came from the new spell as well, but they had the encouragement and their own ability to use them because she says, now that your sisters are equally as powerful as you.
Mm.
And then she says, they're just leeches off me. They are nothing. They are below me. And she puts the sisters down while standing next to them, flying next to them. She says, yeah, they're just leeching off of my power. So I think the powers came from the new spell, not the completion of the spell, but the progress of the spell, because I had to repeat it 7 times, didn't they?
Yes. Okay, fair enough. Are there things that didn't sit so well with me? There aren't many of them, to be fair. I really enjoyed this movie for the most part. I was a bit disappointed by how little we saw of our drag Sanderson sisters.
Yes, I was hoping they would do a musical number with them.
I wanted a number from them, or I wanted a group number with the Sanderson sisters and the drag Sanderson sisters, yes, or something. They got like one spoken line each, and it felt like a bit of a wasted opportunity. I mean, maybe it's just Disney being a bit Disney and a bit like, we're going to be inclusive, but we're not going to show it because we don't want to upset anyone.
That's exactly what it is. I don't know how most LGBTQ family feel about those references, because I know the younger audience of people wanted something a bit more center stage and more focused on it, but for me as a 42-year-old man, seeing that in a kid film for me was massive.
And so yes, I suppose the drag queen inclusion in this movie depends on what side you, I personally would have loved to have seen more of them, but then as you say, the fact that they're there at all is huge.
It's huge,
and Disney will be taking
someone...
baby steps.
Oh yeah,
into
they
that
will
whole
do.
Aspect.
Can we just touch base on the new coven and their relationship? Yes. And I just think the new girls
Let's
in this.
Well,
we talked a lot about the Winifred sisters and the older cast in this, but we haven't really touched base on them. And I thought they were great. I was really invested in their rift and their friendship, and one of them getting a boyfriend and dumping their friends and stuff. It's a relationship we've all
and just
gone
that
through.
Whole thing of like they've fallen out and nobody really knows why. This is a very typical thing of the teenage girl experience, that there's a big falling out. The two girls think the one has gone off with her other friends, and then the one girl thinks that the other two don't want to hang out with her anymore. And they've
because
not actually sat and had the conversation because teenage girls don't talk properly.
Yeah, no. And I like the way that it started off there. We didn't have to watch the riff appear. It just was like, you know, it seemed pretty normal that we started the movie off there. And they did such a great job inventing this new coven in this movie. So I don't know if you remember a movie in the 90s called The Craft with Nick Campbell.
I'm not sure I've seen it, but I know of it, yeah.
Last year or the year before.
And it's a witch movie.
It's a witch movie. It's exactly, it's called The Craft. It's about a coven. And they made a sequel to it a year and a half ago, following the same kind of storylines of a young coven getting together. It was called The Craft Legacy. Hocus Pocus 2 does a better job inventing a sequel about a coven than The Craft Legacy does. Let me just tell you that. It's not a bad sequel. What I would say is it's a disappointing sequel if you're going into it expecting things from it that you're not going to get. It's basically haunted by the same thing this is, where people want more stuff from the original. And it's not delivered to you. People don't quite understand these movies.
But that's quite a long gap from original to sequel as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
This is the issue. Is when you leave it too long, when you do the sequel too late, this is the issue. Yeah. Anyway, we might talk about that in a minute. Let's talk about the girls.
They were, oh my God, all three of them, they were so good.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed the aspect of the two girls and the way they didn't want to like, bitch to the dad originally about how they were like falling out with it. They were like still covering from her because she's still her sister. And they only grasped her up to her dad about the party when it was the chance of danger.
Yeah.
You know, their law, even though they were separated, their loyalty was still tied together.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And those girls are the right ages to play those parts. You don't have that information, do you?
I can get that information very quickly. So let's look at Whitney Peake, who plays Becca. She is born in 2003. So she's 19 now. So she, they're a couple of years older because she's 16.
The boyfriend, boyfriend is 25 in real life.
Is he actually? Because you text me while we were watching it and said he looks about 25.
No, he is 25.
He is 25. I've just looked. He is actually 25. 24. 24. But yeah, and a half. So yeah, so the girl who plays Becca, Whitney Peake, is about 19. Melissa Escobedo, who plays Izzy, doesn't have a date of birth on her IMDb profile.
Yeah.
So I can't tell you that one quickly. And then Lilia Buckingham, who plays Cassie, also 19 years old. So they're not far off compared to how a lot of movies cast their teenage characters. These are quite close in age. And you can't cast actual 15 and 16 year olds in movies unless you've got all the time in the world to work around child labour laws. So there is a reason why a lot of movies cast older actors into teen roles. But at least in this one, they've kept it relatively close. So that's good. And it shows and it works. I really like the dynamic of the three girls. I find their relationships very believable.
Yeah,
the way they interact with each other, I find it very natural. And I also like the counterpoint they provide to the Sanderson sisters. They are everything the Sanderson sisters are not. The Sanderson sisters go everywhere together. We very rarely see anything but all three Sanderson sisters. There's a couple of moments where one of them comes out and does like a jump scare, for want of a better word. Who are they singing to? And Sarah jumps out and says, "You." And then there's another one in Walgreens with Mary.
Yeah, I love the when the Sanderson sisters turned up, and then one of the girls goes, she goes, "Why are they singing and dancing?" The other one goes, "I know, but I can't stop watching.
That's exactly how I felt. But you very rarely see anything but all three Sanderson sisters. And yet they're quite often arguing.
Yeah.
Whereas with our new coven, there's not much of the movie where you see all three of them together in the same shot. It's quite often the two, and then the third one is elsewhere. And yet, even when they're ostensibly arguing, we never see them argue. They go to the Cassie's house. Cassie's really pissed off with them because they ruined her party and got her grounded forever. But even then, they're not arguing. The whole thing blows up about how they feel like they've been effectively bullied by Cassie's boyfriend. And even that happens without an argument.
Yeah.
You know, that they've got that strong connection and that love that we see in the Sanderson sisters at the very end, but it's almost like Winifred doesn't realise it. We see it at the very beginning. We see the strength of that sisterly bond when there's the threat of them being separated as children. And then at the very end, when they are separated, you see that awful moment. And that's what you were saying earlier, when we both got quite emotional. You see that awful moment in Winifred when she realises what's happened and that it's the consequence of her action. But apart from that, you don't see the love between them very much through the movie. Whereas with the younger girls, you see that love running all the way through. You see that sisterhood, even when they're not together. And I think it provides a real balance. And it makes the movie, for me, end on quite a positive note.
Yeah.
Even though you see the beginning of the movie all over again.
Yeah.
Because the three girls get the book, and one of them has started to get her witch's powers, and they go off into the world with the book, with Mother Witch following them, albeit not to their knowledge.
Yeah.
And it framed in a different way, you'd be thinking, oh, okay, and then the cycle begins, and then the next installment, be that a movie, be that a series, is going to be these three girls wreaking havoc. Whereas I didn't come out of that movie thinking that at all. I felt like these are going to be a different kind of witch. They're going to be witches, or certainly the one is certainly going to be a witch, and she's got her coven, but they're not.
Yeah.
Then, you know, she says herself, I'm not interested. I'm not that kind of witch. I'm not interested in having that power. And I think it does leave it open for scope for future installments featuring those girls, I think probably in the form of a series rather than a movie. But it's going to be a much more lighthearted kind of Wizards of Waverly Place type.
Yeah, no, 100%.
Thing where like they're, good, you know,
they'll go
bewitched
down
almost.
Yeah, you know, but they'll go down the route of good witch and not bad witch. Absolutely. From what the Sincere Sisters are.
They're absolutely. And you might get your bit of friction if there's a bit of temptation to do something a little bit not so right. But you can tell they're going to be a different kind of witch from the outset, which I really like. So, Michael.
Yeah.
Is this an unloved sequel? Not by you, obviously. I think we know where you stand on this movie.
I think, you know what? I can see those numbers dropping. They're going to end up in that. But we said last time, I think they'll end up in the same ballpark in the 30s for the critics. The audience, I'm a little bit disappointed in. But I feel like over the next 10, 20 years, I think that number will grow back up with the audience. People will go back and rewatch it without the rose-tinted glasses on and with their own expectations.
Mm. I remember going to see the first Harry Potter movie.
Yeah.
When it very first came out, I think I went and saw it like maybe on release day, if not certainly over release weekend. Might have even been with you. I'm not sure. And I was really disappointed in it. I didn't like it at all.
Yeah.
And then I went back and saw it again a week or two later with someone else, I guess, and really enjoyed it. And I was thinking afterwards, and I think it was because I had gone into it with such expectations from having read the books, and there was so much hype, and all you'd heard about for weeks was Harry Potter, Harry Potter, Harry Potter, and you build it up to be something.
Yeah.
And I went and saw it and I was like, oh, I was really underwhelmed by it. And then when I went back the second time, which must have just been because someone wanted to see it with me, and I was like, oh, okay, fine, I'll come and see it with you. Because I wouldn't have wanted to see it again based on my first impression of it. And I really enjoyed it the second time. I went in with no expectations and really enjoyed it. And I wonder if that's what's going to happen with this movie.
I think 100%.
This weekend.
When the first film came out, people were clear, the Bette Midler film. The other two weren't so no. People went in going, it's a Bette Midler film. And then they got these kid Disney. Like I mentioned in the last episode about how Amistad Maupin wrote about how terrible it was in The Night Listener.
Yeah.
Like back then, the first film was a critically panned flop. The people that watched it hated it at the time.
Yeah.
The critics hated it at the time. It grew a cult, became a cult classic. And I see this taking exactly the same path. Talk about this in 5 years' time, people going, oh, Hocus Pocus 1, Hocus Pocus 2. Maybe there'll be a Hocus Pocus 3. Because it being a streaming movie, we've got more chances of there being a sequel from this than if they did another theatrical release.
Yeah. And I agree with you. I think it's suffering initially in terms of, the reviews have not been good. I did a quick Google. I haven't sort of exhausted all possibilities of reviews, but overwhelmingly the reviews I've seen have been mostly 2 out of 5 stars. There's been a few outliers, but there's been very few.
I've seen a mixed bag. I think it's split. I think that a lot of people like holding at kind of like 58-59% for critics. I feel like it's a split bag. Some people have gone in there with just loving seeing Bette Midler and the team back on screen again, and they've been dreaming about that day. Some people have ripped it apart because in their head they've written their own sequels in their head.
Well, this is the thing. This movie comes with the weight of 30 years of expectation for a lot of people, because certainly a lot of people our age who, as you said, are not the target audience. The target audience for this movie were not born when the first movie was made. And so might have seen it because their parents put it on at some point. They might never have seen the first movie. And actually, this movie stands well enough. You don't need to have seen the first movie to understand, because they show you enough storyline through flashbacks and through narrative to bridge the gaps.
Well, that's the reason why they've changed the storyline to this. They need people to be able to click on it without spending another 2.5 hours watching another movie.
Exactly.
And they want kids to, like, you might have 30 years of watching this movie, but a kid today doesn't. And because it's all over social media, they might just go in and watch number 2 and watch number 1 afterwards.
But I do think that give it another few years, and where Hocus Pocus has become a lot of people's Halloween ritual, maybe not for Halloween night itself, but if you've got kids, perhaps, I think in the fullness of time, it will become a marathon.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
And people will do a double bill. In the same, all the people who watch Hocus Pocus every year, I think the vast majority of them will end up getting to a stage of doing it either a double bill in one day or do it over a weekend or over a course of the weekend. I think if you watch the first one every year, you will start to watch the second one every year. And I can very easily see myself watching both every year.
I don't think we will see, if they do a third one, I'll be surprised if we see those three girls back in the franchise, if they want to bring back Winifred and stuff. I think they'll focus on the new storyline again, so to keep that system running.
Well, I mean, they again, spoiler alert, I mean, why you're still listening, if you haven't seen these movies, I'm not quite sure, but in case you haven't, spoiler alert, we do see at the end of the movie, if you watched to the end of the credits, which by now it's 2022, you should be watching every movie to the end of the credits, because you don't know what they're going to do. And we know now that there is another Black Candle in existence. So it is possible for the Sanderson sisters to come back. How they would do that, I don't know. I think we're more likely to see a continuation of the young girls, the teenage girls' storyline, either in a movie or more likely a series.
I wouldn't be surprised if we get a TV spin-off about the young coven with Hannah Waddingham. Could we see the bird fly off at the end? That is what Hannah Waddingham transfers us into, and focus on that. And I think then we'll get, I do feel like if this has got the viewing numbers, there will be a third Hocus Pocus movie. During interviews, the three women said they're happy to do a third one if Disney wants them to. Kathy Najimy suggested doing an animated movie instead of a live action.
So, well, this is the thing, is that with the greatest of respect to all three of them, they are going to start aging out.
Yeah, quite. They're going to have to do, if they don't do it in the next 5 years, I don't think we'll get it, because Bette Midler will be in her 80s. And I'm not sure that she will want to start being strapped into a harness then, or putting those teeth in.
Yeah.
You know, but I could be wrong. She might, it is Bette Midler. I would love to see her play this character to the end of days, but I'm not sure that. It depends what these viewing numbers are like. If Disney's happy with this opening weekend viewing numbers, no matter what the critics say and stuff, and the number, not just at this opening weekend, but if those numbers keep constant for the whole month of this month, if it keeps going for the whole of October to Halloween, and those numbers are statically and people are going back to rewatch it, or new audiences being found within it, then we could most likely be told there's going to be a third film. And if they are, I think we'll get a new team. I think they'll carry on that thing. I wouldn't be surprised if the original cast came back, but look what happened with Jurassic World Domination. They got the Jurassic World team back with the Jurassic Park team, and everybody bitched and hated it.
Yeah.
You know, you're never going to please fans, because they build these up in their own head and they make their own storylines, and there's internet and people have opinions and people have choices what to make is. But guys, if you watch this movie, just watch it as a 13-year-old kid. Don't go in there as an adult and go, 30 years, I want my movie. Watch it through the eyes of a 13-year-old and just enjoy the ride it is. Don't be so critical about it. It's going to do you more harm than it is the movie. You're still giving its viewing figures to it. Just enjoy the ride of it. But Claire, how many spooky broomsticks would you give Hocus Pocus 2?
I'm going to give this movie 4 spooky broomsticks and a Roomba.
And a Roomba?
Little cheeky Roomba on the side. It's so not a perfect movie. No, so it's not quite. That's like a kind of towards a 4.5.
So 4.5.
Edging towards 4.5. Not quite 4.5. More than 4, less than 4.5. Because it's not a perfect movie.
No.
But it was never going to be a perfect movie, because what is a perfect movie? And we're talking in this kind of context. Like you say, they were never going to please everyone. There are things that I would have liked to have seen slightly differently, but they're quite nitpicky things. For the most part, I found it very enjoyable. I think it got the balance mostly right between nodding back to the original, but still driving the story forward. The only bit really that I thought, oh, okay, here we go again, was the musical number, One Way or Another. And I'm going to just clarify that, because I'm not saying that that shouldn't have been in there. If it hadn't been in there, I would be fuming.
Yeah.
Because it needs that. And there is that thing where you go, okay, so now we're going to do that again. And it just went on a tiny bit long enough that I was like, okay, we've done this now.
Oh, I could have had another 5 minutes of that.
But what I did like is the way that they kind of subverted it. And I hadn't picked up on it on my first watch. And then when I did my reading around and I watched it again, they enchant the crowd and send them off and say, find Mayor Trask.
Yeah.
But that's all they say to do. So that's all they do. They go and they find him and they touch him and then that's it. Spell over. And they're like, oh, what happened? How did I get here? They don't capture him. They don't take him to the Sanderson sisters. So I do like that they kind of, they played with that element of it a little bit. But apart from that, all the other nods to the first movie, I really appreciated. I thought they were, a lot of them were subtle enough that it didn't feel like you were constantly being hit over the head with this hammer of the original movie. I liked that this was, we haven't really talked about it, a much more diverse cast
than 100%. The first
movie. We've seen a lot more people of colour in this movie, and we're seeing people of different colours as well through the movie and through the supporting cast as well. Yeah, I think there is far more going for this movie than there is to criticise. So for me, just shy of a 4.5, 4 broomsticks and a Roomba. How about you? Like, I need to ask.
I went into this with very low expectations. I kind of like, I've always loved the original. As if you listen to the previous episode I talk about, it's always been one of my favorite Halloween movies. I went in with low expectations because I knew they wouldn't, if I went in there with high expectations, I knew they wouldn't be able to deliver everything I wanted.
Yeah.
So, and the amount of I've watched it 4 times, as we've discussed, and every time I've watched it, I've actually enjoyed it a little bit more because my expectations are really low. And I just enjoyed seeing the Sand Sisters back on screen again. I enjoyed seeing the girls, these new coven, develop. I enjoyed that whole aspect of it. Musical sequences were great for me. I loved it. I was a bit worried. I felt like not the opposite to you. I felt like them doing the whole stage musical scene seems a little bit more natural than when they first arrive and they sing The Witches Are Back, what's some play on the Elton John song. And I felt that was a little bit shoehorned in. I enjoyed it, but I felt
I really liked that because I wasn't expecting it. I didn't know that number was going to be in there. I only knew about the Blondie
number. But then it kind of like gets the twist of being a musical and not a part of the film's contents. Them just breaking out in
but they did at least they did lampshade that with the whole who are they singing for thing comment from one of the girls. So that's how they get a pass on that. But I see your point.
It leads into that whole, is this a musical? Look, or
if Hocus Pocus was a musical, I would be here for that.
Well, we, you know, Hocus Pocus 3.
Episode 3.
Bette Midler did rewrite most of the lyrics to The Witches Are Back and changed the lyrics. So she's
are
got
you listening, Disney?
We want a musical for the third one. Imagine it's a musical. She puts a curse. They could actually lean into that Buffy episode, the musical Buffy episode, and do that with Hocus Pocus.
For sure. That's it.
That
We've
would
done
be
it.
Good. We've done
We've
it.
We've done it, Disney. You can contact us to discuss fees for that idea.
But for me, I would give Hocus Pocus 2 4 broomsticks, actually less than you.
Oh.
Because I can't fight. The first film is a 5 for me. I love the first film, and it's not the first film. But I enjoy it for what it is. And I will watch it every year with the original movie. I will watch them back to back. It will be a treat for me to watch and see the Sanderson sisters back on screen again. And guys, just enjoy it for what it is. Stop being critical about it. It's a kids' movie. It's designed to sell merchandise. Enjoy for what it is. This also leads back into our Batman and Robin conversation.
Yeah. It's a 2-hour commercial, isn't it? For
t-shirts
and
toys. That's all this is as well. It's a selling point for Disney. It's toyetic. It's there to sell product. Go out and buy your Winifred costume. Download the album. Buy the cuddly toy. Just enjoy it for what it is.
So that's Hocus Pocus 2 for you. Listeners, tell us what you thought of the movie. You can leave us a comment. You can email us on unlovedsequels@gmail.com. And you can find us on all the socials at Unloved Sequels.
So it's goodbye from me, Michael.
And from me, Claire.
But until next time, take care, guys.